Blog Talk Radio.
Interesting birthdays today. One of the second Roman emperor, was a soldier who never wanted to be emperor and Caesar, Tiberius Caesar, second emperor of Rome, and his mother pushed him into it, and he became he really didn't want it. And I recommend you see the series on the Roman emperors that Robert Graves did on TV. I, Claudius, who was his nephew. And an example of the Roman emperors, the first Roman emperor was Augustus, who probably was poisoned by Lydia's wife, who he married. And, of course, he was the nephew of Julius Caesar. Augustus became rather straight-laced in his later life. Apparently, had an incestuous relationship with his sister, and also there may have been a relationship with his uncle Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar was known to historians as a husband to his wife and a wife to his men when he was out in the field. Augustus Caesar passed a law which required single Roman men had to get married, otherwise there would be a fine, and there would be pressure for them to create families and to protect the Roman society and to build it and to strengthen it. Tiberius didn't want any part of this. He was a very unhappy man, and in his later life, he had this retreat down in the island of Capri, and he had a swimming pool which he would swim with young boys, and they were known as Tiberius's minnows. And this was the start, probably, of pedophilia and perversion among the Roman emperors, which went through Caligula, Nero, and many others. The last Roman emperor who was also became a Christian was Constantine. His wife is known in the Catholic Church as Saint Monica. Tiberius was probably murdered by his other nephew Caligula, who reportedly suffocated him with a pillow. And of course, Caligula engaged in incestuous relationships with his sister, did all kinds of perversion marriages, one of his lovers, made his horse a consul, and was eventually murdered by the Praetorian Guard. Among the other birthdays today, W.C. Handy, William Christian Handy, great black musician, played the trumpet, and there's a picture of him on this web today. And he was probably best known for writing the St. Louis Blues, great black musician at the turn of the century, along with people like Louis Armstrong. A great theater magnate, a playwright. I don't know if he's a playwright, but he certainly put on plays. George C. Kaufman, birthday today. One of the first great American tenors and baritones, Lawrence Tibbett, who sang at the Metropolitan Opera. Also on this date, Turo Toscanini, the great, probably the greatest of the Italian conductors, began his American debut by conducting the Metropolitan Opera. Great actor with an unusual voice. He was in The Cardinal and several other films. He was also, I think, in one of the Otto Preminger films, Burgess Meredith's, his birthday today. Among the deaths today, death by execution, a métis, that's a French-Canadian term for someone who has French and a native Canadian Indian heritage. Louis Riel, who started a revolution or started an uprising against the British and the Canadians in Canada around the late 1880s, and all the Mounties, which was set up by Queen Victoria, or she approved the formation of the Mounties, the Redcoats, finally captured him, and he was tried and hung. And there's still this separatist feeling in French-speaking Canada. Well, French is a bilingual language up in Canada. In Quebec, there are still people who are separatists who call themselves, or were called, the Blanc Negre, the Black Niggers, or Black Negroes. That's their term, not mine. Among the deaths today also, and he died at 59 years old, was Clark Gable, who died at the time he was shooting a film with Marilyn Monroe. Now, he married a woman and later had two sons, had a son. I don't know what the kid is doing today. He's no longer a kid. This is 1960. And, of course, in 1961, the grand old man of Congress, Speaker of the House for 17 years from Texas, a bachelor. We don't know if he was gay or not. Great friend of Lyndon Johnson, Sam Rayburn, born today, or died today, excuse me. Among the events today, Francisco Pizarro captured the
I actually fell for him. It. That. There.
Martha's a romantic at heart.
That I am. I actually fell for him. And the match seemed practical, too. For a while, Daddy really thought that George
had
the stuff to take over when he was ready.
Wait a minute, Martha.
And we both thought that naturally...
Stop it, Martha.
What you want.
I wouldn't go on with this if I were you.
No, you wouldn't, would you? Well, you're not.
You've already sprung a leak about you-know-what.
What? Why?
About the sprout, the little bugger, our son. If you start in on this other business, Martha, I warn you.
I stand warned.
Do we really have to go through all this?
So anyway, I married the SOB. I had it all planned out. First, he'd take over the history department. Then when Daddy retired, he'd take over the whole college, you know? That was the way it was supposed to be. Getting angry, baby, huh? That was the way it was supposed to be. All very simple. And Daddy thought it was a good idea, too, for a while. Until he started watching for a couple of years. Getting angrier? Until he watched for a couple of years and started thinking that maybe it wasn't such a good idea after all. That maybe Georgie boy didn't have the stuff. That maybe he didn't have it in him.
Stop it, Martha.
Like hell I will. You see, George didn't have much push. He wasn't particularly aggressive. In fact, he was sort of a flop. A great big fat flop.
Stop it, Martha.
I hope that was an empty bottle, George. You can't afford to waste good liquor. Not on your salary. Not on an associate professor's salary.
Hello again, my friends. Welcome to part two of our inaugural inquiry into animal rights and people's language. My guest today, again, is the eminent Otto Butz, president of Golden Gate University and what we call the house etymologists around here. Otto, after an election, both print and electronic journalists continually use the trite phrase, lame duck politician. As a political scientist, Otto, do you think that these journalists are really saying that our politicians are impotent, ruptured, and babbling incoherence?
Well, I think to some extent, yes. A lame duck, I guess, is a duck that can't fly very high, that can't move very fast, and once a politician has lost the power to continue functioning and to dole out favors, the person's power is much reduced, and so the analogy of the lame duck isn't too bad at all.
Perhaps we ought to cook the duck like the Chinese.
Well, again, back to our previous discussion, it has nothing to do with the duck, but you see, you need analogies to describe human situations, and so you naturally turn around to nature. But the most interesting part of nature is the animal kingdom, and again, I think that it adds color. You could describe in a whole paragraph what happens to the politician, but if you say lame duck, somehow you dramatize it, and you see this poor little critter.
I don't know about the politicians being poor.
Well, I tell you, politicians, I think, for the most part, don't get paid very much, and that's one of the problems of our time. I mean, to run a campaign costs you millions of dollars, and how are you going to get it? And that, you've got to be nice to people. And then we criticize others, but if we were to run for office, how would you finance all of that? So this is one of the dilemmas of our political life, you know, lame or non-lame ducks.
Although I must say some politicians do appear to be babbling constantly. Otto, for people who want to elevate the level of political rhetoric, would you have any practical suggestions?
Well, elevate political rhetoric. I mean, rhetoric is rhetoric, however elevated. You mean the political discussion.
Yes.
I think that the market more or less tends to determine the level of the rhetoric. If a politician is talking with thoughtful people with a sense of complexities, if she or he engages in stupid rhetoric, it's not going to fly. So the politician, if successful, as any merchandiser, has to attune himself or herself to the audience. On the other hand, if you've got a bunch of people who go for rhetoric, then the politician isn't going to play rhetoric. I think it's a question of supply and demand.
And on that, we'll end this segment of the discussion on animal rights and language. I think that's very apropos. Tune in for part three, next edition at 10:25 a.m. Thanks for listening.
If I may ask? Okay.
Murdering butcher. I've had enough of this bloodshed. He's the master of life and death on a quarter deck above the angels. McCoy! Quill! I'm sick of blood. Bloody backs, bloody faces. Bloody, you doing your last command on this ship. We'll be men again and we'll hang for it.
Casting me adrift, 3,500 miles from a port of coal, you're sending me to my doom, eh? Well, you're wrong, Christian! I'll take this boat as she floats to England if I must. I'll live to see you, all of you, hanging from the highest yardarm in the British fleet.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, what do you think?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrade.